Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, a Radio Free Europe podcast on developments in Russia, its war against Ukraine, and its relations with the rest of the world. I'm Steve Gutterman, editor for Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus in the Central Newsroom at RFERL, and author of The Week in Russia newsletter. This week's podcast is about the war in Ukraine, as it so often is, but this time we're going to focus on the remarkable political developments in the United States and what they could mean for the war, how they could affect Ukraine's defense against the Russian invasion. I'm talking about President Joe Biden's withdrawal from the race, less than 4 months before the election, of course, and also the Republican candidate Donald Trump's selection of J.D. Vance, who has been very critical of U.S. aid for Ukraine, as his running mate. And my guest today on The Week Ahead in Russia is Sam Green, Director of Democratic Resilience at the Center for European Policy Analysis, or CEPA, and a professor at the King's Russia Institute at King's College London. Thank you very much for joining me, Sam.
Thanks for the invitation. Always a pleasure, Steve.
All right. The pleasure is mine. It's great to have you on the show again. Obviously, the big news is Biden's withdrawal from the race, which happened not much more than 24 hours ago, I believe. So let's discuss that first. Biden dropped out amid growing pressure from fellow Democrats who were concerned after his performance in a debate against Trump in late June about the 81-year-old's ability to defeat Trump in the election on November 5th. Biden said he would focus on serving the rest of his term, which ends on January 20th, and he endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris to replace him as the Democratic candidate. But that is not automatic, and it's unclear at this point whether she will, in fact, be the nominee. Sam, do you think Biden's withdrawal could have a substantial effect on the war in Ukraine or on U.S. relations with Ukraine or Russia?
Well, I think it can have an effect in a couple of different ways. I mean, one is, first of all, it just frees him up to be president, right? I mean, and we should recognize that for anybody, regardless of age, this is an extraordinarily difficult time, I think, to be president. The campaign inevitably becomes a distraction, and the potential for the politicization of foreign policy, particularly support for Ukraine, is already begun to play itself out. In fact, it's played itself out even long before the presidential campaign began. And so to whatever extent this makes it possible for him to sort of divorce his activities as president from the exigencies and demands of trying to recapture the White House in November, it does mean, I think, a little bit more headspace, a little bit more flexibility, a little bit less politics when it comes to support for Ukraine. So I think that will be taken, at least, for the midterm as a good thing. I think the other thing that this probably does is maybe make it a little bit more likely that the Democrats keep the White House and thus that U.S. policy when it comes to the war in Ukraine continues. I think, and I imagine we'll talk about this since you previewed J.D. Vance, right? But there are some very real differences, obviously, between the Democrats and the Republicans and between a Biden administration or a Harris administration and a potential Trump administration when it comes to policy on the war, as well as just U.S. foreign policy more broadly. So I think that, America's allies, chiefly Ukraine at this point, will breathe something of a sigh of relief if this means that it's more likely that policy continues.
Okay, thanks. Sam, I'm sorry, I'm going to ask you to, can you make it so that you're sitting a little lower or like that? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, apologies for that interruption. So I just wanted to follow up a little bit on that response.
Sure.
One thing that I think, Russia is frequently trolling the U.S. One of the the things that Russian officials and leaders tend to say is, I mean, they tend to sort of troll the fact that U.S. Politicians are only around 4 years or 8 years or whatever. There's obvious thought that despite what Putin has actually said, that Putin and Russia, would prefer Trump be president than Biden or than another Democrat. Do you think this is going to affect the way Russia looks at the election, or is it just going to affect the way Russia kind of trolls the U.S. and trolls the West over the election?
I'm, to be perfectly honest, not terribly inclined to pay too much attention to Russian trolling. I think it's done for a domestic audience, and it's not terribly meaningful or even necessarily effective. But I do think that, what Russia is looking for in American foreign policy is inconsistency. And I think that's probably the chief value that they see in a Trump presidency, right? They want American foreign policy to be unsettled. They want there to be long and difficult conversations about whether or not to support Ukraine and to what extent, and whether or not to continue to keep pressure on Russia and to what extent. That gives them, breathing space. It gives them room for maneuverability and allows them to stay on the front foot. From that perspective, I think they will be happy simply to see the end of a Biden administration. They might imagine that a Harris administration would bring a difference. I don't actually think that that it would. I think that the overwhelming portion of the Democratic Party and the Democratic foreign policy establishment is consolidated around, at least the core of the tack that Biden has taken. The Kremlin will, I think, continue to push, to whatever extent it can for a Trump administration, although I think recognizing that itself may not turn out to be the easiest thing for them to deal with.
Okay, thanks. And I guess I'll just take this opportunity to ask a similar question about Ukraine, how Ukraine may be viewing this, this Biden dropping out of the race. Obviously, Biden is somebody who essentially was representing the U.S. administration when he was vice president. So, he has deep ties there in some ways. They're fraught ties because we won't go into details there. But obviously, he's been a very vocal advocate of Ukraine, since the beginning of the full scale invasion. Do you think that Kyiv will be at all sort of concerned about what is this change going to mean?
I think the primary concern that Kyiv will have will not be the change between, first of all, Biden remains president for the end of this term. Right? Mm-hmm. And I would not expect, Harris to have much of an impact or the Harris campaign to have much of an impact on the way that the Biden administration prosecutes its foreign policy. So the key, potential shift that Kyiv will be concerned about will be a shift to a Trump administration. Again, I think we'll talk about what that might mean. In terms of a potential shift, starting next January from a Biden administration to a Harris administration, I think, you talked about fraught ties and there has been something of a frustration. I think there's been a clearly and publicly expressed frustration in Kyiv about some of the calculations that the Biden administration has made. Look, I don't think we should belittle at all the achievements that the Biden administration has amassed over the 2 years and a bit of this war, right? The level of aid provided, the level of transatlantic unity in support of Ukraine, again, masterfully, I think, pieced together by the White House and the State Department, is really unprecedented. But at the same time, right, there have been calculations made in the White House that really do emanate from Biden having to do with the risks of escalation that has created a certain reticence when it comes to the scope and the speed with which armaments are delivered to Ukraine and the ability of Ukraine to use those armaments. And it is at least plausible that a Harris administration will calculate those things differently. And I think that Kyiv may see that as a net positive, but again, only once Harris herself is in the White House, which clearly is not a foregone conclusion.
Okay, thank you, Sam. Let's turn to the Republican ticket and Trump's choice of Vance as his running mate. Trump has said several times over the past year or so that he would end the war, or he will end the war, very quickly if he's elected. I think he has said 24 hours at least once. And in any case, he's promised that he would end Russia's war in Ukraine before he's even inaugurated, on January 20th, if he does win. What he's not said is how he would go about doing it. But various other factors, including remarks by aides and by Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, have raised concerns among supporters of Ukraine that Trump's efforts to bring peace would involve Ukraine having to give up substantial amounts of territory. Enter J.D. Vance, who is an opponent of U.S. aid to Ukraine. He's voted against it in the Senate, and who said, I believe this was shortly before Russia launched the full-scale invasion in February 2022, that he does not really care what happens to Ukraine one way or the other. Sam, Trump's choice of Vance has certainly caused concern in Kyiv. How do you think it could affect U.S. ties to Ukraine, U.S. military and financial support for Ukraine, and the course of the war?
Well, first of all, right, I wouldn't read too much into Vance, at least when it comes to what we would expect from a Trump administration. Right? I think Vance was chosen in order to help Trump win the election. He reaches out to certain constituencies. He energizes a certain part of the Republican base, who I think probably were fairly energized to begin with. But there's a certain electoral calculus to this. I don't think he was selected because of his foreign policy thinking. And Trump, generally speaking, doesn't select people around him in order to shape policy. Right? Trump selects people around him in order to support Trump. So Vance will, I think, sing whatever tune Trump demands of him throughout the duration of this campaign, and then throughout the duration of the 4 years, presumably, of a Trump administration, if they are lucky enough to win in November. But vice presidents, as we've seen with Harris, under Biden, don't really shape much in the way of policy in the best of circumstances, and certainly not foreign policy, and certainly, doubly certainly not in a Trump administration. And so I don't think that we should take necessarily Vance's instincts on foreign policy to be where Trump's own instincts are. Right? We know that Trump is very much focused on transactionalism. We know that Trump is very much focused on, winning victories for Trump. And I think that's one of the reasons, actually, why what a Trump administration might mean for Ukraine, for Russia, for the war is a little bit less straightforward than some people imagine. It's hard to see how, throwing Ukraine entirely under the bus, handing it over to the Russians is something that Trump would be able to spin as a win. And again, we know that he likes to do things that he can spin as a win. And so I think that, despite what we've heard from Orban and others, the idea that Trump has a workable peace plan for Ukraine seems a little far-fetched. You didn't mention a piece that Boris Johnson published in the Daily Mail just the other day after himself having spoken with Trump. He did provide some more detail, at least on what he believes Trump might be thinking when it comes to the future of Ukraine. Chooses to engineer a genuine victory for Ukraine along the terms of a return to at least the borders prior to the 24th of February 2022 and a recognition of Ukraine's right to join NATO and the European Union. It's really quite difficult to imagine a Putin-led Kremlin agreeing to that. But what we're clearly not seeing is Trump nailing his colors to any of these particular masts, because from his perspective, electorally, there's no incentive for him to do that. His base doesn't ask him questions when he says, I'm going to solve the war in Ukraine. It's enough that he says he's going to do it the same way that he says he's going to bring jobs and he's going to boost the economy and he's going to stop immigration and all these other things that he doesn't have concrete plans for. And where people like Project 2025 have outlined concrete plans, again, somewhat far-fetched as they might be, he's distanced himself from those. So, you know, I don't think it's a productive use of time to spend the next several months discerning exactly what Trump will do in office, because he's got no incentive to tell us.
Well, thanks, Sam. And I noticed, you know, as you said, you said that Trump, it's not in his interest, I guess, to talk about, you know, what his specific plans might be. And of course, he did not do so, you know, again, in his, acceptance speech at the Republican National Convention. You know, he again said he would bring peace, but he did not say how he would do it. And Vance, I would say notably, did not mention Ukraine in his address, I guess, the day before Trump's. So, you know, I guess that would potentially or kind of supports, you know, your idea that they're not committing to anything, you know, at the moment. And for now, their constituency, I guess, you know, likes to hear that he will make peace. So, but I did find that interesting that Vance didn't mention it, you know, after being fairly outspoken about Ukraine and aid to Ukraine previously.
Yeah, I would just cut back on that a little bit to just maybe correct one misimpression I might have given, which is that I don't think it's appropriate or correct to say that Vance doesn't matter at all. Right? I think, you know, Vance clearly, if Trump wins, and maybe even if he doesn't, becomes sort of the heir apparent to the leadership of that part of the Republican Party, which at the moment dominates the Republican Party. We know that there is a foreign policy debate within the party between those who take a traditionalist, somewhat multilateralist view, who value NATO, who value America's relationships in Europe, and who really do see Russia not just as the acute threat of the moment, but as an enduring threat. And then you have a part of the Republican Party that sees it very, very differently, and Vance certainly represents that part of the party. So to the extent that he and his wing of the Republican Party are in the ascendancy, right, I think that you know, will create some real concern, particularly among America's European allies, including Ukraine, but not only Ukraine, when it comes to the consistency and the constancy of American engagement in the transatlantic space, of America's commitment to NATO, but also the degree to which Washington sees its European relationships as vital to America's prosperity and national security.
Thanks, Sam. And I'm just going to, if you don't mind, I'll just ask one more follow-up question, which is about, I guess, the talk about talks. You know, with Trump's promise to bring peace and discussions of what he may have in mind, there was the plan that two aides have apparently submitted to him. And there's also Zelensky, you know, seeking a second kind of peace summit at some point before the end of the year. Do you think that these developments, you know, may be leading to or increasing the chances that there will be some sort of discussions about peace or a ceasefire, kind of, I guess, regardless of who wins the U.S. election?
I think there is a growing constituency in Washington. It's probably a growing bipartisan constituency that is struggling to see how Ukraine wins this war militarily without a level of commitment, including commitment to defense industrial production, that thus far neither side of the Atlantic has managed to create. And that means at least being open to exploring some kind of a negotiated resolution, or at least a temporary resolution. The question is that a resolution that leaves Ukraine more secure than it is at the moment? Is that a resolution that the Ukrainian population itself can support, and thus that is, you know, tenable? But also, is that a resolution that works for Putin politically? I mean, Putin, as we've discussed before on this podcast, is very much tied to this war now. It's very difficult to see how he himself would pivot away from it. So again, you know, Boris Johnson has floated ideas. Others have floated ideas. Every one of them is incompatible with even the basic tenets of what I think Putin can deal with, anything that would involve a withdrawal from territory that Russia currently occupies, or even an abandonment of aims to occupy territory that Russia has claimed but doesn't militarily control, right, is politically anathema to Putin. But I think even trying to take Russia off of a war footing would be very, very difficult for Putin. So while it's possible that we could see a pause in the fighting, it is difficult to see that turn into some kind of a lasting peace. The question then, I think, is less one of negotiations between Ukraine and Russia, frankly, and more one of negotiations between Ukraine and the West, right? In that situation in which we have an uneasy ceasefire, right? Many in the West will say, well, in these uncertain and unsettled circumstances, we can't pursue security cooperation with Ukraine. We cannot pursue NATO integration. We cannot pursue EU integration. And that amounts to a victory for Putin and is fundamentally destabilizing for Ukraine, not to mention unjust, right? So the question is, how does the West get to a point where in the circumstances of a ceasefire, should that materialize one way or another, it will actually press ahead with its commitments to Ukraine rather than withdrawing.
All right, Sam, thank you very much. A lot of interesting comments there on a range of issues, and it looks like it's going to be kind of a consequential few months coming up. And I'm going to wrap it up here. Sam, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you very much.
All right. Once again, I've been speaking to Sam Green, Director of Democratic Resilience at SIPA and a professor at the King's Russia Institute at King's College London. And my name is Steve Gutterman, editor for Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus in the Central Newsroom at RFERL. This has been The Week Ahead in Russia. Our theme music is Не стреляй, or Don't Shoot, a song from the early 1980s by Yuri Shevchuk and DDT. Please be sure to check out my newsletter, The Week in Russia, which covers the latest developments in Russian politics and society, as well as Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. Subscribe by visiting www.rferl.org.